Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 141, week 7 in the SEC, recorded Tuesday, October 14th, 2014. This week, Shane Bailey and Blair Smiley are joined by Stephen Baker from AndTheValleyShook.com to discuss another exciting week in the SEC that includes a big win by the now number one Mississippi State Bulldogs, Ole Miss going to College Station and providing another impressive defensive performance, LSU's late heroics to win in the Swamp, as well as the Georgia Bulldogs shutting out Missouri without Gurley in the offense. All this, a look ahead to this week's action, and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back to talk about just another crazy week in the SEC. We just finished up week 7, going to be talking about week 8, both weeks, hot and heavy. But this is a fan podcast done from a fan's perspective. So we're a little one-sided when it comes to our allegiance, and that's okay. We do this every week. From the luxury of our own homes. So we're all over the country tonight. We're actually just in 2 states, but, you know, hey, that's all over the country.
And there's only 3 of us. Come on. That's two out of three.
That's right. Yeah. And so we do this on YouTube, so you can get this through our Google Hangouts page. You can watch it if you wish to watch our gorgeous faces. You can listen via iTunes, Stitcher Radio, anywhere that you can get a RSS feed for your podcast. Just go out there and type in SEC SRT. You can find us that way, Twitter, Facebook, all those places as well. We are on those social media outlets. So we do this every week, and we take a look back at the SEC. And tonight joining me is Blair Smiley. Welcome, Blair, straight back from Stark Vegas.
That's right, man. Can't spell Hell State without a number one, so just the way it goes.
He's been waiting 100 years to be able to say that. And then
like forever.
Yes. And then Stephen Baker from And the Valley Shook. Now, you're in Texas, is that right?
I'm in Dallas, Texas. I spent the weekend in Waco for the Baylor game, so that was pretty exciting.
So you got to watch a lot of touchdowns.
I saw a ton of touchdowns and some terrible cornerback play. But you can't spell LSU without 1 and 2. So,
oh, yeah.
So that's 12, right? And that's how many men that Tennessee had on the field a couple years ago, right?
It was 14.
14.
It was a very unique defense. It didn't work. Actually, it was very effective at stopping them from scoring. Unfortunately, that is illegal, so you got another play.
Any jab I can make as a Kentucky fan to Tennessee, you know, I'll do that. But I'm the host. I try to stay somewhat impartial, but it's getting harder and harder with Kentucky doing what they've been able to do. So we've got some things to talk about with them this week as well. On the good side, it's not like we can talk about Kentucky basketball. You know, we've also got that to look forward to. As an aside,
LSU might actually be good this year. We might actually, you know, I'm not going to say beat Kentucky, but we might actually be within 10.
Did you get to see the NBA combine held at Lexington this week? Did y'all hear about that?
No.
So Calipari has, 90 NBA scouts invited in, and he did like an NBA combine type of practice just for his players. It was tremendous. It was great.
Yeah, supposedly he didn't want the distractions of them coming all throughout the year. So he says, I'm going to give you one day where we'll set it up till you get to see everything, and then I'll invite everybody in. They can do it in one day, and they televised it.
It was great from a marketing recruiting standpoint. Genius.
Did he complain about Mike Krzyzewski getting too much too close to the players?
No, I think he was silent about that this time. So, hey, you know, you have to take the jabs when you can get them and use every tool you can to help your program. So I've got no fault for him.
Hey, look, anyone who hates Mike Krzyzewski is okay with me. So
no,
go for it, John Calipari. You know, you keep sticking in that knife.
Well, he's got somebody else that he dislikes very much, and this year he's back in the SEC, so we're going to see how fun that is. Now it gets further south with another orange team, so that Auburn,
that's right.
That Auburn team and Bruce Pearl, they've never gotten along, so that's now a new Kentucky rivalry, whether anybody knows that or not. So, but this is, you know, that's our 5 good seconds of basketball as done on another nationally syndicated radio show, you know, about soccer. We gave basketball because we're in the middle of football, but we would be silly to think that basketball wasn't important to a number of SEC fans, at least a couple of schools at least, and I'm one of them. So I definitely give basketball its due, and we will definitely talk more as we get a little closer to basketball. But what a great season of football so far. I mean, to say that the SEC East and West is wide open still is somewhat of – it's really not an understatement. It's totally true, and the West is totally upside down.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that we went really the first, what, 2 or 3 weeks where, from a national standpoint, you really didn't have a lot of great games. And then now you've gone on like kind of a month worth of, you know, where it kind of just elevated. And, you know, and of course you've got all the stories. You've got the Baylors and the Mississippi States and the Ole Misses and the teams that traditionally aren't there at the top that have kind of taken the nation by storm from that standpoint. But it has been a pretty interesting month worth of football to watch.
I think it's been outstanding. You're right about the first couple of weeks being terrible, but that's kind of a hangover from the BCS era. Teams used to schedule very poorly because the BCS stressed not losing, and I think we're going to transition to a playoff era where it's going to be more about who you've played. I think schedule's going to become more important, so I think those first couple of weeks will get better in the future. But as soon as we got the conference play, it's not just the SEC. Pretty much every conference is crazy. The Big Ten, Rutgers and Maryland, everyone made fun of that. They're sitting near the top of the standings out there. Of course, the SEC, Mississippi State, number one for the first time in school history, and that's pretty darn cool. The Pac-12, okay, Oregon's sitting on top of that, but UCLA was supposed to be a contender, and they fell apart.
Yeah.
And Big 12, Baylor's sitting on top of that. Oklahoma having problems. It's been a blast. This has really been an outstanding season so far. We're only in October.
Yeah.
It's there is so much parity across every conference, and that's not always been the case. I mean, there are just a small handful of undefeated programs left in the country right now. And this time last year or the year before, you know, there was a dozen or more that
yeah.
You know, were in that discussion. A lot of them we knew were going to fall out sooner or later, and you know, a couple of them at the very top. You know, one of the top three is going to have a loss. We know that because two of them play each other at the end of the year. If this
and then two play this weekend, so you got, you know, Florida State at Notre Dame play each other, and then Mississippi State and Ole Miss play each other. So you know that four of the top five teams are going to play each other that are currently undefeated. So you know that, you know, you're at least going to have three. Two of them that'll go down with a loss. So. Yeah, definitely intriguing. It's going to make this playoff thing awesome.
That brings up something, and I thought about this earlier today, and I actually forgot about it till you said that. And it's an aside before we start looking at last week's games, but I want your all's opinion on this. You know, all they're talking about is the top four and making these four-team playoffs. But realistically, can you do that when you have that scenario sitting there facing you that one of these two teams is not going to be in the top four after this week? Or what? One of them's not with Notre Dame or Florida State. If this same path happens for Ole Miss and Mississippi State, and I don't want to look too far ahead because they both have a bunch of really, really tough matchups coming up in front of them over the next, you know, 6 weeks or so. But realistically, two of these four teams aren't going to be in the discussion. Am I wrong with thinking that? Why are they trying to say that these are the top four teams that need to be in when they're going to, one of them, two of them are going to have losses?
Well, some of it's a placeholder. They're the top four right now. I do agree with you. Notre Dame, Florida State's that's an elimination game. I think either Notre Dame, or particularly Notre Dame, could make the playoffs with a loss. But for all intents and purposes, this is an elimination game for both those teams. the SEC, it looks like the strongest conference, and with everyone else falling down, we're looking at two teams from the SEC making this tournament right now. And right now, Ole Miss and Mississippi State are in the best position to be those teams. Let's be honest, Auburn and Georgia are still in this race. Georgia, I think, has the most mystifying loss of the season. And Auburn, they looked pretty good against State. They fell behind early, but they did rally back. I think they dug themselves too big of a hole to get out of. But it's not like I didn't walk away from that game thinking Auburn was a really bad team. I came away from it thinking Auburn's really good and State's just better.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's what you're going to see, and especially until we actually see, you know, when is the actual committee going to come out with their rankings? It's not until almost November, correct?
No, yeah, October 28th, I think, Tuesday.
First, and then we'll actually maybe be able to take into consideration maybe some criteria.
That's 2 weeks from today. That's 2 weeks from today, yeah. Though.
Yeah, so I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, you're talking about the eighth or ninth week of the season, and you'll kind of have an idea of what they're going to do, but I do think it's right. I think it's just, hey, every week it's changing because, hey, here's the best four. But we're on track to possibly have no undefeated teams or one or maybe two undefeated, and then you've got to distinguish between all the one losses or those there. And so that's what it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how things actually go from here.
The way the season is shaken out so far, it would be shocking to me at this point if there's not a two-loss team in the playoff.
Right.
There's almost no way that the one-loss team is going to stay with one loss. There's just too much parity. There might be an undefeated team in the playoff, but we're staring down a two-loss team in that playoff. Yeah. And that's how come a team like Auburn, Ole Miss are still sitting pretty, even if they lose. I'm assuming Ole Miss is going to lose. I'm getting ahead of myself. I do think Auburn's a better team than Ole Miss, and I think that's the team that's lurking out there. That Mississippi State might see them again and might have to beat them again, but this time on the road or in a neutral site. And it becomes a lot different because part of the reason State won that game is because they played at home in front of some fanatical fans, and that played a factor.
I agree, but so far, I mean – The bad bow, good bow discussion's kind of been put to rest, at least for the time being. The last 3 or 4 weeks with Ole Miss, Bo has been very reliable. Mistakes have been limited in Ole Miss's half. Auburn, yeah. This is the first time I saw Auburn really make some serious mistakes. Now, Mississippi State made their fair share during that game, but Auburn made some just vital mistakes that really cost him some points.
Yeah, and I think what you saw in that game, you know, obviously I pay attention to Mississippi State. Mississippi State is really, really good. Auburn was by far above and beyond the best team. I left there going that Auburn is one of the top five teams in the country, and Mississippi State solidified themselves as a top five team. I mean, I really thought, hey, this is a legit, we're not just kind of running this wave up. We're seriously going to make some contentions down the road here. But Auburn made it very tough for Mississippi State to run. Nobody is running the football against Mississippi State. Auburn could not run that dive play. And basically what you saw was two quarterbacks that really need to be able to run the ball to be very, very, very efficient in the passing game. And for big parts of the game, Nick Marshall had to throw the football. Dak Prescott had to throw the football. And it wasn't – I think that's where they were – I think both teams were uncomfortable doing that because it's not the – you know, it's not the best thing that they want to do. And I think you have – I think Auburn's defensive line was better than I thought they were because I thought we could kind of pound them. And we ended up doing that. We ended up having some success, but we went through an eight possession period there in the second and third quarter, eight possessions where we had four turnovers and four punts. And Auburn, you know, made mistakes as well. I think it was two really good teams that knew it was a really big game, made some mistakes, and I think it was because both teams, you know, helped them make those mistakes. I think Mississippi State played probably its worst game and still won by 15. But I think Auburn was, you know, one of those teams that I think I came away from that going, I was still skeptical of their defense, especially after the Kansas State kind of thing. But they're legit, man. They're going to, I mean, I hate to see, I mean, they're going to be good. And I do think they did dig a hole, but, that was one of the things that I just took away from that was both of those teams were very, very, from a trenches standpoint, it was just a physical battle.
Yeah, if you look at Auburn's schedule, they've played two of the toughest teams to play on the road. Yeah. Kansas State is a tough team to play in Manhattan, particularly on Thursday night. Strange things happen there. That is, you almost throw out the stats from that game. That's just a really, really hard place to play. And then going to Starkville, which is normally not that tough of a place to play, yeah. But all of a sudden they have a number one team to cheer on. I mean, State fans, they have been waiting their whole lives for this. That is the craziest mm-hmm. Starkville crowd you're ever going to run into. And they kind of ran into it, not a buzzsaw, but what happened is they got down so big so early, and it's kind of score effects. It completely changed how they were playing that game. They had to start throwing the ball over the place because they were down 21-0 right off the bat. And a lot of that was self-inflicted, but I think Mississippi State fans can definitely take some of the credit for that. They came in there and they rattled that game. They're, you know, ringing those cowbells. It played a huge factor. But Auburn now is not going to have a game where they have to go into an environment nearly as hard as Manhattan or Starkville for the rest of the year. Auburn's schedule, as tough as it is, they've gotten through the hardest part of it.
Yeah. I mean, but they still have to go, what, to Ole Miss, to Georgia, and to Alabama, right? Yeah.
Are those all on the road? I thought
all of those are on the road, I believe. Those are their four. And I mean, Oxford's going to be obviously pivotal, but that comes after, you know, that's a couple of weeks down the road. But, you know, Auburn, they're a really good football team, man. And I do think that was what was impressive to me, guys, was, you know, I've grown up a State fan, so I've been in that stadium. I had not been to a game this year. And going into that environment, and watching a team as such as Auburn that, you know, these guys went to the SEC championship last year. They went to the national championship game last year. They were in wild, crazy environments. And for that first quarter, they were shook. I mean, they were rattled big time, unlike anything I've ever seen them before. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, they got up. But, you know, it was a credit to them. I mean, they were able to fight themselves, you know, back into this thing, and it was mainly because Mississippi State couldn't run as effectively as they had at will, and they really kind of had to pass their way out of it, you know, from that standpoint. Dak Prescott, you know, I was sitting there waiting for, hey, where's the game where Dak is going to be just a little off? You know, he's going to make the throw that he probably shouldn't make, and, you know, he made probably his two worst throws of all season, you know, and he made those, and you couple that with a true freshman punt returner and, you know, Dan Mullen doing what Dan Mullen does, which is, you know, do a fake punt, you know, up 21-0. You know, it's an impressive thing, but that was what was impressive to me was the crowd.
Well, I actually think what was really surprising about that Mississippi State game is that Josh Robinson didn't rush for 100 yards.
Yeah.
As much hype as Dak Prescott's been getting this year, and he's earned a lot of it because I was a big Dak Prescott skeptic, and he has proven me wrong all year, and he's deserving all the Heisman hype, so I want to get that out of the way. But I think Josh Robinson has been Mississippi State's best player. He tore apart LSU. He just went crazy against A&M. I think he's the guy who opens it up. Dak Prescott's best play is the play action, and it's because everyone's crashing the line to stop Robinson. And this is going to sound crazy. He only averaged 5.1 yards a carry against Auburn.
Yeah.
And for him, that's off his, you know, his season average of 7 yards a carry. And that, I think, played a big factor in the role. Auburn, I don't want to say shut him down because he did rush for 97 yards, but they slowed him down. And I didn't think you could slow down Josh Robinson. He is amazing. And I don't understand why he's not the Heisman candidate.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is that he – you know, he was a guy that he never seen going backwards. And in Auburn, he danced a little bit. They had lanes where he was going side to side and he wasn't going north and south. I saw several times where when he got hit, he went backwards. So that was a credit to Auburn. They are much more stiff on the defensive line than I ever thought they were. And they pushed our offensive line around a little bit. But I think it's by far the beefiest and quickest line that we'll see this year. I think Ole Miss has got their speed kills. You can't get to the edge, but they're not as beefy as Auburn is. So, but yeah, I do think that's a big key, and he has been a huge key to what Mississippi State can do. Because when you get Dan Mullen's offense, rolling downhill in the run game, it's very difficult to stop.
All right. So, anything else we want to add before I switch gears and take us to a different team?
Yeah, I would actually like to address Auburn fans to let them know that they can quit crying about the pass interference calls. I mean, this is the most ridiculous. I've got a couple buddies who are they're Ole Miss fans. I mean, they're Auburn fans. But, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, you talk about sore losers. I mean, get over it, man. You would have gotten within eight. You got in within eight twice, and you never could capitalize on it. Don't fumble a freaking kickoff, and don't throw a pick in the last couple of minutes. We handed you four turnovers in four possessions, gave you the ball inside the 40, four consecutive trips. You got in the red zone three times in those deals and came away with 6 points. So, you know, you walked in there with 17 out of 21 red zone possessions where you scored a touchdown and scored in every one of them. You got six opportunities against Mississippi State and scored 6 points. So, I mean, come on, quit crying.
The only thing I'd like to say is that I'd like to be rooting for Mississippi State this entire year because they've been waiting a long time for this, but I'm still mad at Dylan Day, and I hope he blows out his knees.
we won't go down that road.
Other than that, everyone else on the roster I'm rooting for, so I hope I'm still a little bit mad about that. But other than that, I mean, it's hard not to be happy for State. It's been a long time coming, and it's also just good for the conference. To have a team that's, I don't want to call them a doormat because Mississippi State's been going to bowl games, but they haven't been a contender. And it shows the depth of the league, and it's just good for kind of everyone to have their shot. It was kind of getting stale of, you know, Alabama, Auburn, LSU every year. So it's nice to have another team, and if it's going to be someone, it better be State and not Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think the thing that's been impressive, obviously the story of it, but I think it's what people, when you watch, I think for a State fan, it's really fun to watch these guys, and I can see why people that aren't necessarily fans of Mississippi State would kind of gravitate to it because they're a fun group. You can tell that they're busting their tail, but how dominant they've been, how physical on both lines of the scrimmage, and how dominant they've actually played in these games is what's been impressive to me. I mean, that's the thing that as a State fan, you just really can't, you just can't get your mind wrapped around, you know, that you're sitting there as a consensus number one heading into a bye week in week six, you know, with a legitimate shot to, you know, play for the West in Atlanta. So we'll see how it all unfolds.
Let's continue talking about the depth of the SEC West and talk about Arkansas, Alabama. Realistically, you know, we've been talking as Arkansas has improved, and we've seen this progression that they're going to finally sneak up and win, beat somebody. Stephen, you mentioned Georgia's path, you know, to the East. You know, they still got to go to Arkansas. They got to go to Little Rock this week, and we'll talk about that. You know, if you want to talk about a game that could sneak up on somebody, this Arkansas defense is for real. The Arkansas offense, you know, Bielema's just pounded down the middle. Give them the rock. Head to a head, hat to a hat, and our guys are going to beat your guys. You know, that almost came to fruition without a missed field goal, missed point after attempt of at least tying that game against Alabama.
Yeah, for Arkansas, a lot of it's at this point self-inflicted. They should have beat A&M. They should have beat Alabama. But you know what? There's not a column in the standings for should have wins. They're called losses. And Arkansas, I mean, this is big boy football. At this point, Arkansas's got to turn these almost wins into actual wins. And I'm beginning to think it's something to do with the team itself because they're getting so close, and it's like almost mental. Like, they just can't believe that they're good, and they just find ways to lose. And if I was an Arkansas fan, I'd be so frustrated with this team Because right now we should be talking about Arkansas the same way we're talking about State and Ole Miss. But we're not, because this team has just it's like they have this loser gene right now, and they just can't shake it.
Well, they were a holding penalty away in the A&M game. I mean, that was a 21-point swing.
Well, they also had the ball. They had 4th and 3, I think, late in that game. They decided to kick a field goal, and they have a terrible kicker, instead of just running it down A&M's throat. And A&M's run defense is pretty bad. Yeah. I mean, this was a team that should have just run for the first down and then knelt to the ball, and they win the game. And instead, they set up for a field goal, and then they let up that long touchdown pass. It took A&M no time to march down the field, right as we've been bragging about Arkansas's defense. When it mattered, Arkansas has folded. Yeah. And that has to do with them. It's not bad luck at this point. It's something to do with Arkansas.
And I think you couple that with, you know, any of these, how does that affect these losses? You know, they put everything into Alabama this week, and they came away with nothing. And so at some point, you got to get over that hump. And sometimes you kind of got to stumble your way through it. And kind of screw it up to get over it. You know, it's kind of the breaking that losing trend, so to speak. You kind of got to work your way through it. And you know, everybody sits there and goes, "Hey, well, you know, Georgia's coming in here. This is a prime spot for Georgia." For me, it's more about Arkansas. Hey, how did this deflating loss at Alabama this past week affect you going into a Georgia next week? Because everybody goes, Arkansas is going to get by this year. But what's the Arkansas psyche going to be? I mean, how many losses does it take, or close losses, till they basically fold up and go away? And it's the same Arkansas team we're dealing with. So I think that's where we're at right now. It's just, you know, other thing. I mean, to move it on to the other side, I mean, Alabama's just got all kinds of problems. You know, and Saban's pissed off at the fans for – you know, yeah, and I understand his psychology, because you're going into this Texas A&M game where you've got to win the game, so you got to dwell on the positive that you took a win, and you just got to kind of build confidence. And that was a great strategic psychology move for him to just throw it all on the media and the fans. So, you know, Alabama is not the Alabama that it was.
He's using the "it's not me, it's you" mentality when. You know, Britton, who's been on here a number of times, for those that listen regularly, you know, he sent me this nice email that broke down exactly why Alabama is not the Alabama of old. And you know, for him, it starts with the offensive line. You know, in the recruiting in 11, 12, 13, he said these guys are the ones that should be contributing right now. He said a third of them aren't even on the team anymore. And the other two-thirds are not contributing like you would expect them to. So that does have some issues on the offensive line. You know, defensively, you know, we'll stick with the offense. You know, the other opponent's defense is able to stay in cover zero and cover one, not have to play man-to-man and really put that pressure on Cooper. And all of these design plays that we were just gushing over Kiffin at the beginning of the season, how well Cooper is going. He's been basically shut out the last couple of games. They're starting to figure out this offense. And, you know, Britton's really troubled about it.
Well, I think once you go back to Alabama, as bad as they looked against Arkansas, and Arkansas did look like the better team, Alabama won.
Exactly.
And once again, it goes back kind of the mentality of these programs. Alabama won and they're upset. But this is a program that they just know how to win. And I kind of hate that kind of talk, but they do. This is a team that – when it comes down, when the rubber hits the road, Alabama expects to win. They're looking around that, you know, that locker room. They're looking down that sideline, and they know someone's going to make a play. Heck, most people think they're the guy who's going to make that play, and they go out there and they do it. And that's why Alabama won and Arkansas lost. Arkansas players look around thinking somebody else is going to pick up the water, and it's got to be you. I mean, you have to be the guy to do it. And Alabama, I think they have that kind of culture of accountability. I mean, no one's going to call Saban warm and fuzzy, but he's certainly accountable. And those players, I mean, if you don't perform, there's another guy's going to take your job. And if they don't care about winning, they care about playing.
Yeah, and that was Britton's thoughts. I'm not falling off of that cliff and selling Alabama. I mean, as much as you say Arkansas gave that game away, the game was still in Arkansas. That's a tough place to play. Arkansas is not the same team it was when we talked about them in our previews. They are a much improved program. they have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and they played Alabama well for most of that contest. Alabama found a way to win that game going on the road. Now, you couple that with this Saturday, they get to go back to Tuscaloosa. They have an A&M program that has boat raced them in the last couple of years, has put all kinds of points on them, even if Alabama wins. And this is their opportunity to say that they are still a contender for the West, is if they can go in next week and take care of business against A&M.
Because A&M is reeling right now. I mean, that's a program right now that's just feeling terrible about themselves. So, I mean, that's a – I'd call it an elimination game. They're all, because Alabama's really not out of this race. They lost again to Ole Miss. I mean, they're still in this as well. We're treating them like they're in the bottom half of the conference. They're in the same position Auburn's in, and I was just hyping up Auburn as a national champion contender. Alabama is an A&M blowout win away from righting the ship. And we're just saying, oh, it was just some early season struggles. That said, A&M can go in there. They can win that game because A&M needs to right the ship as well. It's a really interesting matchup for what it's going to mean for the rest of the year for those programs.
Yeah. Oh, it's an elimination. It's an elimination game for A&M because if they lose, they're done. That's three losses in the West.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be a team. There's going to be a team that could have one loss or two loss and no team in the West go undefeated, but there's not going to be a winner coming out of the West with three losses.
Oh, no way.
And the other thing, guys, one of the things that I actually kind of paid attention to is the whole Lane Kiffin side of things here. He comes across as a guy that's kind of rigid. He comes across as a guy that's going to break down the film. He's going to have you a first quarter synopsis. You're going to play well. But as the game goes along and people adjust, he did this at Southern Cal. He choked the offense to death. If you remember how he just strangled it to death to the point where it got him fired. And then, some Joe Blow that's the offensive coordinator comes in there and they start slinging it around for 400 yards the last three games off of Ed Orgeron's, little together staff. And then, of course, Sarkisian comes in and they're a lot better. It just seems like he can't adjust and he can't do anything. He's so rigid and he just clamps it down. I'm interested to see how that evolves over the rest of the year because I think that's a dynamic that is very dominant in that coaching staff right now. I'm interested to see how Lane Kiffin reacts.
But this year he's not the head coach. When he was at SC, he was the head coach. So you should be looking at Nick Saban as the head coach to be coaching his offensive coordinator to say this is how we need to be approaching this ball game. You can look at those two and see tension on the sidelines at times a way a play was called. Nick Saban's the boss. If that's the way the game wants to be managed, that's the way the game wants to be managed. Saban's the one that dictates that at the end of the day.
Yeah, I just see the same trend happening that was happening at USC. And, Kiffin was the head coach, but he was also calling plays. So, it's one of those things where, he's solely calling plays, and it's just one of those things that's just kind of interesting to me. I'm just interested to see how that dynamic works out over the next couple of games.
Yeah, Nick Saban's always viewed offense as the, 5 minutes as defense gets a breather. Saban's a great coach, but he's not an offensive mind. It's not – I mean, he gives his offensive coordinators a lot of rope to hang themselves with. And in a weird way, I feel like he hired Lane Kiffin to have a scapegoat for this season.
Yeah.
Like he knew this season would be a little bit of a struggle, a little bit of a rebuilding year, so he hired the most hated man in the SEC so at the end of the year he could fire him and blame everything on him.
It could be, man. It would surprise me, that's for sure.
That's kind of the Machiavellian brilliance that I think could come out of Saban. I mean, I think he's evil, but I do think he's a great coach. And I think at this point, it's like, what are you going to do? Alabama only has two weapons. I mean, it's like they're either going to hand it off to Henry or they're going to throw it to Cooper. I think people figured it out. And Sims is a pretty limited quarterback. There's not a whole lot that offense can do. All you do is just put three guys on Cooper and just hope he doesn't find a tight end.
Yeah, and your tight end that's such a five-star stud can't catch the football. So,
and your other tight end that hasn't got to play is out selling pot.
Yeah.
Well,
but he's not arrested, though.
Of course not. It's Tuscaloosa.
So another team that's reeling is Vanderbilt. How do you win by 1 point against Charleston Southern?
Well, I tell you what, we actually talked for like 12 minutes about Vanderbilt 2 weeks ago.
We're not doing it tonight.
I think we talked too much about it. Why don't we just move on to the next one?
They're a terrible football team. That's how they won by a point.
Holy cow.
It's simple as that. They're terrible.
You know, I think you know Chad Caldwell, Blair. He's been on before.
Oh, yeah.
And he was getting on me talking about, you know, the SEC schedule was released today, and I made a comment on Twitter about how, you know, we just need to now get a little bit better opponents. And he starts right at me about Kentucky. It's like, well, we've got Louisville on the schedule this year. That's no cupcake.
And it's so, no Charleston Southern.
So you know, he's saying, well, you know, these programs need these cupcake-type teams so they can get their money. And I understand that. But unfortunately, in today's world, in the way this, you know, top five conferences are going, these mega five conferences that are going to expand even further down the future, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to start playing. You know, I think, Stephen, you mentioned to it. You know, you might be able to lose a couple of these games, but who are you scheduling in the future? What kind of quality opponents are you having from top to bottom, from game one to game 12, that's going to make this difference? And Vanderbilt, barely scraping by the Charleston Southern, isn't going to help them in the long run.
Yeah, I don't think the four games that Vanderbilt has in the non-conference is going to be anything that's going to keep them from the other eight games in the SEC.
Yeah, it's the eight games in the SEC and also the quality of their football team. And, and you know, James Franklin has left the building, and it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other team in Ole Miss, the other team in Mississippi that really I wasn't giving them the credit they deserved at the beginning of the season. I had some doubts about that program. I think even if you talk to Cole, as high as he was on the program, Blair, when we did our preview, you know, there were still doubts in his mind about what this program is. But, you know, they kind of did to A&M what you guys did to Auburn beginning, is they knocked them in the mouth at the very beginning. And realistically, A&M never recovered.
Yeah, and the thing about it is A&M, you can do that to them. I think that was something that Mississippi State wanted to go out and actually say, we want to be physical with this team and hit them in the mouth. And Ole Miss did that. And to their credit, you know, a lot of people thought going on the road, first time you ever been there, after that emotional win, they put that to bed real quick. I think there's two things that Ole Miss that jumped out, and I don't like to give Ole Miss any type of credit. One is the defense we all thought was going to be pretty good is way better than we thought. I think from a speed standpoint, they do a really good job of dictating you to try to go outside on them and throw the ball on them, because that's their best weapons. They have still not had anybody that said, I'm going to line up and pound you straight up the middle, because I think if you're going to attack that defense, that's the only prayer you've got. And Texas A&M's not built like that. They were built to just run into the buzzsaw that was Ole Miss. The other thing that's actually come from that, Shane, that I think is kind of interesting, is Bo Wallace, this whole bad Bo, good Bo stuff. When you have a defense that's allowed, what, six touchdowns all year or four or whatever it is, you're talking about a guy that doesn't have to thread the needle, that guy that can become more of a game manager, and they can score 21 points instead of trying to score 35 to win a ball game. And what it's done is that they've kind of ramped him down. He's making good decisions. But, you know, it's one of those things. I'm really interested to see over the next 3 weeks. They're going to beat the crap out of Tennessee coming up. But, you know, when they have to go to LSU, when they have to go have Auburn come there, they got to go to Arkansas. You know, is it going to be a game where they can't run the ball? I mean, they're not really a particularly good running team. Is Bo going to be off a little bit? And can somebody punch the defense in the mouth and they don't have a good day? That's what I'm waiting to see. But a very impressive win. Matter of fact, I mean, I thought it was an impressive day for them.
For Ole Miss, let's first say the nice things out of the way so I can get them out of the way. I second everything you have to say about their defense. Their defense is amazing. It might be the best defense in the country. It's fast. They hit hard. It's deep, which is surprising to me. I thought they were actually a pretty thin unit. Like, they had a lot of five stars with just a bunch of guys behind them. But even when they go to the bench, they just feed off of each other. That could very well be the very best defense in the country. And I kind of have a theory that defense doesn't go cold. The defense isn't going to have a night where they have a bad night. I mean, someone's going to put points on them, but they're not going to just totally lay an egg.
Yeah.
All right. However, I'm still a firm believer in good Bo and bad Bo. Dr. Bo has thrown 6 interceptions this season. 6. And he's thrown none in SEC play. And the reason is because he's played Vanderbilt and A&M, 2 of the worst defenses in the conference. And then he played Alabama, who doesn't have that good of a secondary. Dr. Bo has really not thrown interceptions against SEC defenses because the SEC defenses that he's played haven't been very good. Well, Alabama's got a good defense, but their secondary isn't. And as soon as they have to play an Auburn or a Mississippi State, they're going to run into some problems. That defense is not going to score 14 points for you again like they did against A&M, where A&M pretty much gave that game away by throwing pick 6 after pick 6. And, you know, Dr. Bo could go in cruise control. This is still a guy I do not trust. I think Wallace is going to cost Ole Miss at least 1 game a season, and I think he's going to cost them 2. I think their defense is great. I love their defense. But if you contrast Ole Miss with Mississippi State, everything that Mississippi State does on defense, their offense supports that. They have a good ball control offense. They can quick strike you occasionally, but they also have that play action, and they can grind you down. Ole Miss, their offense does not help their defense at all.
Yeah.
Their defense is hanging out there by themselves, and if they get into one of those 9-6 game of the century kind of struggles, there's no help from the unit, and in fact, there's going to be a lot of 3-and-outs and punts. And that unit's going to come right back on the field, and we'll see what happens when Ole Miss gets tired on defense. But even worse, if they're down late in the game or they're within 3 points, do you trust Dr. Bo to protect a very narrow lead late in the game? They got everything go right for them in Alabama. Alabama fumbled the football. That was very uncharacteristic of them. And so it happened once. I don't think it's going to happen again. I'm not going to say Ole Miss is a fraud because they're a good team, and I think they're going to go to a really good bowl this year. But I think when the dust settles, I mean, we're still in early October. When we get through November, I think when the SEC West standings shake out, we're going to be looking at Auburn and Mississippi State towering over everybody. And Ole Miss is going to be back down there with Alabama just staring up at the 2 top teams.
Blair, I think you've got to like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, the –
making fun of Ole Miss, which was, I was saying, the one Mississippi school that I think is legit, that's going to be standing when all the dust clears, is Mississippi State. Mississippi State, I think, is a team whose biggest weakness is how to hold a 3-touchdown lead. And you think they'd be better at it with all the practice they've had. But if your biggest problem is that you're not good at holding 3-touchdown leads, that means you're pretty awesome. Ole Miss's biggest problem is a quarterback that nobody trusts and a running game that I don't think can run out a clock that's going to ball control you to death to help out that defense. Ole Miss has the best defense in the country. I think their defense is legitimately great. I think at the end of the day, their offense is what's going to let them down.
All right. I love it. Steven, you made me laugh so hard because I was trying to find reasoning to say that Ole Miss wasn't as legit as everything else that I'm seeing, and you were able to put that out there for me. So I appreciate that.
Well, really what I came away from the Alabama game is I felt Alabama was the better team, but they just turned the ball over too much, and they just kind of fell apart. Alabama had a 10-point lead in that game in the second half and just wilted. And a lot of that was the perfect Ole Miss storm. I mean, that was the biggest game. The crowd was going nuts. This was that LSU game with Eli, only they won it. This was the game, and I don't think you can do that 5 more times. You get to pull into that bag 1 time. Mississippi State, on the other hand, they had that really big pumped up crowd, and that was, you know, the game of the century for them, and they won by 15 points, and the game was never really that close. Yeah. I mean, Auburn got within 8 a few times, but Mississippi State looked like they would have won it if they played that game on the moon. Ole Miss looked like they needed the crowd to win that game. And I think what's going to happen is when Ole Miss goes on the road, they're going to have some problems. And I still expect Dr. Bo to, you know, commit some malpractice at some point.
Well, let's talk about another program that I think, for most people's indications, heading in the right direction. I'm not buying as much of the hype as others. And, Blair, I think I got a kind of a feeling that you feel similar. And that's Tennessee, you know, their big win this week. You know, it's just a monster win for them, a statement game for them, coming in and hosting University of Tennessee Chattanooga.
UT, yeah. You talk about matchups. I don't know if we want to cover anything with regards to the game, but it was an opportunity then for maybe to work on a couple of things. But they're going down to Oxford with a defensive line that's going to chew and just spit out their offensive line. I mean, Tennessee doesn't have a prayer to win this game in Oxford from my standpoint, as much as I hate to see it. I think it's one of those games where Tennessee fans before the year were like, you know, we're probably not going to be as good, you know, but we can go at least compete in Oxford, you know, and I think they're having to reevaluate themselves because the worst possible matchup you can have is Ole Miss's defensive line against a Tennessee offensive line that can't block anybody. I think they've given up the most sacks and the most tackles for losses. I think it's 20-something sacks, 28 sacks, 49 tackles for loss or something. That just plays right into what Ole Miss does. So,
a running game that still is suspect.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of these things, guys, that when Tennessee comes back home from this, it's not going to be pretty. I'm thinking it's going to be close to a 4-touchdown win. And I think it's just going to be one of those things where, unless Bo decides to just start throwing picks like Steven thinks he might actually do, I just don't think it's this game. I think it's going to be where Butch Jones is going to be having to fight the crowds again about, you know, not jumping off the bandwagon because we're in the 9th year of this downtrodden Tennessee.
Honestly, Ole Miss fans better hope this is the game Bo Wallace throws a bunch of picks because Tennessee's offense isn't good enough to exploit it. Tennessee's got a pretty good defense, to give them some credit. They're not totally inept, so it'll be –
You're right.
It'll be hard for Ole Miss to win by 28 points just because Tennessee's defense will maintain contact. But, yeah, Tennessee, I don't see how they score. The only way they score is if Dr. Bo turns the ball over a bunch of times. And even then, I think Ole Miss wins this game. I don't want to call it a sure thing, but it's about as close to a sure thing as you get at this point in the SEC schedule. Tennessee's not a good football team, and Ole Miss is good. I mean, I know I'm saying – when I'm saying Ole Miss is a bit of a fraud, I'm talking they're not a national title contender, not
top 10.
Yeah, they're a top 10 team, and Tennessee is just they're not in that caliber right now, and they need everything to go right to win this game, and I don't see that happening.
The only other guarantee is Vanderbilt. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Vanderbilt is a guarantee. They're truly awful. Tennessee's got some things going for them. Vanderbilt, wow. I did not think Vanderbilt would be. We have not seen an SEC team this bad in a long time. I'm shocked by how bad Vanderbilt is this year.
Yeah, I love it. This is great. let's see. Do you want to talk about your LSU Tigers going to the Swamp?
Yeah, why not? Let's get that out of the way.
Talk about two teams that didn't want to win a football game.
Yeah, that was definitely a team trying to shoot itself in the foot and missing. my God. Going into this game, LSU could take some – they could lie to themselves a little bit and say, hey, look, the two teams we lost to are Auburn and Mississippi State, and all we've shown is that we're not a national title contender. And honestly, they're a play away from beating Mississippi State. I mean, yeah. I know State was a much better team, and that's a deceiving score, but LSU had the ball and threw the ball to the end zone in the final play of the game. They had a chance. That said, the Florida game, that was the weird thing about it was LSU, if they'd lost the game, would have lost in a way very unlike LSU, which is on special teams. And that is Les Miles's, I mean, that's his wheelhouse. LSU has often just killed teams on special teams play. And for DeBose to just run wild, I think he averaged over 50 yards on punt returns. I haven't seen that happen against an LSU team in a long, long time. And that's frightening. I mean, I know DeBose is great, and I'm hoping this is a one-time thing. But if it's not, LSU needs its special teams to compete with teams.
Well, this week it'll be a test then. I mean, because Kentucky's got a decent return man when he's not out shooting air rifles in the quad in Lexington. I mean, you know, he's very apt to run one back on you.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with LSU is we're back to our, you know, standard incompetent quarterback play. I think they jumped off the Harris train a little bit too early.
Yes.
I mean, he was terrible against Auburn. I admit that. I mean, that was about as bad as a quarterback can play. But he was also a true freshman playing on the road in one of the most hostile environments possible. I think the reason Jennings played the entire game in the Swamp is entirely because of the Auburn game, and they're trying to protect Harris. I think we'll see more Harris at home against Kentucky because it's a safer environment for him. But what was encouraging is, you know, Leonard Fournette started to get carries. You know, he went for 140 yards. He was trucking people. And he didn't look that good earlier, but it might be that just because Auburn and Mississippi State's defensive lines are just that good. I think Kentucky, who has let up a ton of rushing yards on the season, has got to be incredibly nervous about that 300 monster being led by Fournette back there. I think LSU will be able to run the football very effectively against Kentucky. But LSU's biggest problem right now is big plays. And normally when you think about big plays, I think it's defined normally in statistical circles as plays over 20 yards. The thing with LSU would be thrilled to be giving up a ton of plays that were just 20 yards. LSU's problem is they hold teams to, you know, 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yards, and then they give up 50-yard plays. I think Mississippi State had something like 9 plays that went over 40 yards. And if you get beyond the defensive line, you're gone. And everyone's blaming the young defensive line. I don't think it's the defensive line because you can't win every battle. And if you're going 0-2, 0-3, 70, that speaks to the linebackers. They're not plugging the holes. And LSU's linebackers this season, which I keep thinking are going to turn the corner, have been horrifically awful. They have just been they've been beyond terrible. Quan Alexander's decent. He's kind of inconsistent, but he gets some tackles. Other than that, I don't trust a single LSU linebacker. And if you get through that defensive line, the linebackers aren't going to stop you. A safety is going to have to make that tackle. And it's probably going to be 40 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Do you have to – I mean, you've got to be somewhat happy that they were able to come from behind, even though it was as sloppy as it was early for them to pull that out in the Swamp and have that big defensive stop at the end.
No, that was – from a gut check standpoint, that was a great game. If you want to talk to LSU's emotional state, I'm incredibly proud of the team. They could have folded really early on. I think there was a little bit of a fold in the Auburn game. But Mississippi State, they rallied back. Florida, they went down, and there was really no panic with Florida. They expected to come back and win that game. And that's a credit to Les Miles and all the coaches and what little seniors there are left on the team. That the leadership really came through. And even after they gave up that big 70-yard pass play, Driscoll, of all people, throwing over the top, run down the receiver, tackle him on the 2-yard line, and then they get a goal line stand. I mean, that LSU dug deep, and they came out with the big plays when they needed it, and that speaks a lot to the character of the team.
Even if it was a bad pass by Driscoll.
Oh, Robinson got beat in coverage, and you should never give up a 70-yard pass to Jeff Driscoll. I remember when LSU went up by 3, I was like, well, this game's over because I expect there's no way a Jeff Driscoll-led offense can drive 80 yards in 2 minutes, and he did it in one play. I mean, that's not good. But at the same time,
but that speaks back to your big plays that they give up.
Yeah, that's the big plays. But they're on the 2. They stopped them. And yeah, they dropped it on third down. But they did stop them in the previous 2 plays. And if they go for it on fourth down, I felt pretty confident that LSU was going to get that stop. Yeah, they were aided by a drop, but that, once again, we're talking about Alabama, Arkansas. One team felt like they were going to win, and one team felt like they were going to lose. LSU definitely has that. There's still the ghost of that attitude that we're supposed to win games, and they, you know, they found a way to win that game, and that was the most encouraging thing out of it. Still giving up a big pass play to Jeff Driskel terrifies me. What Kentucky can do, because they actually have a decent quarterback. But we'll see. I think that this could either be a – I was talking to a friend before the game. I said LSU needs to win these next two games to get the 2-2, and then you're on track to be 500 in conference, which means that the Florida game is the biggest game of the season because you can't win two unless you win the first. Now at this point, the Kentucky game is the biggest game of the season. I think if LSU can go 2-2, they can lose to Alabama and Ole Miss, and people will complain – but I think Miles can, you know, quiet everybody and at least say, hey, it's a rebuilding year.
Yeah.
But he cannot lose to Kentucky. This is a must-win game for LSU.
Yeah, and I echo your comments on Harris. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that they made a comeback against Mississippi State was because he's a kid that came in and, you know, could throw the ball down the field, unlike Jennings, is something that we didn't see for the first – you know, three quarters of that game. But he was over his head in the Auburn game. And I think you're going to see some packages where he comes in because, I think Jennings is still very limited. But if he can run the football, which I think he can do on Kentucky, this is going to be an interesting matchup. What are y'all's thoughts about Florida? I mean, obviously the other end of the spectrum, with Muschamp and all the stuff that's going on and, they're, yeah, I mean, Muschamp, he can't get a break on anything. I mean, kid drops a, third down touchdown pass on that deal, and they figure out ways to lose that stuff. So, I mean, I know he's pretty much gone, but what's Florida's state of mind right now?
You say that, but let's look at the schedule. I mean, if Georgia loses to Arkansas this week, now they both have two losses in the East. Florida's still there, and they've got the win against Kentucky. So, as much as we say Muschamp's a lame duck coach right now, he's still got a very good shot to have a chance to compete for the East still. He's not out of it.
Yeah, I think Florida looks a lot like they did 2 years ago, where they didn't look that good, but they just kept winning football games. And I think that's where they are right now. They don't look very good. And like LSU, they gave that game away, but had LSU lost, they would have said they would have given the game away. But Florida's just a team that, it's winning is just wired into their DNA, and also that's that home environment. The Swamp is a great equalizer. It's going to be hard for teams to go in there and beat them. And you also look at the East. Who's going to beat them? Mm-hmm. Tennessee is not very good. Vanderbilt's awful. South Carolina is not. I mean, there's not like someone who's going to go on this big run. Missouri just got crushed by Georgia. Really, the only good team in the East you can argue is Georgia. And then, so Florida, if Georgia gets upset by Arkansas, it's a race. Florida can, they can finish up strong and go undefeated the rest of the year. Because what Florida has going for them is, I think they're now done with their West games. Their two losses were to West teams, right?
Yeah, they've got Missouri this week, then they're off. They get Georgia in the cocktail party. They're at Vanderbilt. They get South Carolina. They get Eastern Kentucky, and then they go to Florida State.
The other thing, guys, remember, Georgia's got to play Auburn.
Yeah, because how this season is shaken out is that every team in the East is going to go 0-2 against the West. So three losses can win the SEC East. Heck, four losses might win the SEC East if every team's 0-2 against the West, which I don't think will happen, but someone's got to win eventually. So Florida, in a way, is feeling pretty good because they're undefeated in the division. So they haven't quite thrown in the towel yet, but they're getting close to it. I think the first time adversity, Florida chucks in the towel.
Yeah, it's shaky ground, but they still have their ability to – they get to control their own destiny, and it's hard to believe that we talk about as bad as Muschamp's or as hot as his seat has become, that he still controls his own destiny. If they win the East, he's coming back next year. There's no way he's not.
I don't know. It depends on how you win. If you win the East by some bizarre tiebreaker at 4-4, I think they could fire him. But yeah, if he's 5-3, I don't see how you fire him. Yeah. And that's, though I will say, if I was a Florida fan, the injury at the end of that game, the way the Florida team conducted themselves compared to LSU would have infuriated me as a Florida fan. Because all the LSU players took a knee, and they looked genuinely concerned for the player. Meanwhile, Muschamp is bringing his team into a big meeting, and he's yelling at them, while one of their players, one of their friends, is lying on the ground being carted off on a backboard.
Did you see that? I mean, did you see that blog post from the Florida fan on NOLA Online about that?
Yeah, I can see where he's coming from. I'd be infuriated.
It's a great post.
Like, that's the kind of thing that gets you fired, because when you go into somebody's living room and you're a coach and you're recruiting, you're saying, hey, look, you're part of my family, and I'm going to take care of your boy for 4 to 5 years. And that was close to a betrayal of his players. If someone's going to get him fired this year, it might not be his record. It might be things like that. And you can pull off being a jackass if you're Nick Saban and winning national championships every year. You can't be a jackass if you're going 5-3 or having a losing record. That won't fly.
And that
starts to matter.
And that's a good way to lose a team. I mean, you talk about losing a locker room. That's a great way to lose a locker room.
Yeah, I think those players, you know, you start to feel like, oh, he's just using me. And, I mean, there is a lot of, you know, players and coaches using each other in college football, but that was pretty blatant. And if I was a Florida fan, which I'm not, and so I'm kind of seeing it through an LSU prism, and I'm not saying that this makes LSU the best team ever because of how they reacted, but I could not believe what Muschamp was doing. Like, it was like none of the Florida players were allowed to go over and check on their friend. And that kind of horrified me. That stuff, you know, as I get older, that's the kind of stuff that bothers me.
Yeah, no, that was a tough one to watch. I even live, it's like, man, that was hitting you. That was nuts. All right, let's talk about the other side of this game's opponent. You know, Florida had to take Kentucky to triple overtime to beat them, and some would say that you know, Kentucky got robbed of that game from a clock malfunction or a no call. LSU gets to host Kentucky this week, and they played UL Monroe. Monroe, I don't know how much you guys watched that. Started off very, very impressive to me, or Kentucky was just very, very flat. But you know, Tolles and Boom and Kemp and all those guys, they turned it around, made some really big plays, kind of put that back into control midway through the second quarter, and really that's a coast game after at that point. The defense came in strong with Stamps, and they got lots of pressure on the quarterback at Monroe. I don't know how much you guys watched of that game.
I didn't watch any of that game. I've seen Kentucky play twice now, the Florida game and the South Carolina game. Kentucky, they're a hard team to get a read on. I'm leaving them out of the teams in the SEC East that we know are bad. They could be a good team. This is the most wins they've had in a long time, but they've beaten some pretty bad teams. But then they beat South Carolina, and that's a pretty good win. I know South Carolina's down, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers, and, I mean, it's still an SEC win. The thing about Kentucky, which is weird to me, Florida and South Carolina, they allowed over 500 yards of offense against both those teams. So as great as their defense has, you know, they've shut down like Vanderbilt and UL Monroe. But if we throw those games out, they got torched by two offenses that aren't that great, particularly Florida's offense. You give up 500 yards to Florida, you've got problems.
Well, and when they lost that game in triple overtime, you knew who was going to get that ball on Florida. And Kentucky still wasn't able to stop that.
Yeah, Florida, yes, there was a bad call in the delay of game, but that said, in overtime, Florida just looked like a better team. They just ran down Kentucky's throat, and Kentucky couldn't stop them. LSU does not have a very good offense, though they can run the football very effectively, and they've also been they gave up 237 yards rushing to Florida, 282 to South Carolina. LSU is a team that can rush for 250 yards against this Kentucky offense, and I think that's Kentucky's big concern. This is the big question for them. Can they stop LSU's running game? And this is a huge game for Kentucky as well. As much as I said LSU can't lose this game, Kentucky can't lose this game. If Kentucky wants to be an SEC East contender, they're already down a game. They lost to Florida. They can bounce right back into it. LSU, they're there for the taking this year. LSU does not look that great this year. They're vulnerable to the upset. If Kentucky can win this game, they can ride this out. They need to get another win. They still have to beat Georgia. But Kentucky's right in the race.
Well, so and they've got Georgia and Mississippi State.
Yeah, and they're going to lose the state. But everyone's going to lose at least one game in the West. But if they can beat LSU, then they're 1-1 against the West. And that could be a factor because I think you're looking at a lot of 0-2 teams against the West and the East. So Kentucky, this isn't a must-win for them, but they really, really want this. This could be a statement win for them because the shine's off on beating South Carolina because South Carolina has just kind of fallen apart. But LSU is vulnerable. LSU is not the LSU team of the norm, but they can still run the football. That seems to be Kentucky's weakness. So,
I was going to say, just to add to that, I mean, the other thing that's kind of on the periphery here is, you know, if Kentucky actually goes down there and pulls an upset win in Death Valley, then they're coming back the next week to play Mississippi State, who should be ranked number one in the country still. You never know. If Florida State beats Notre Dame, they may jump back over them or something. Yeah. But it's a CBS game, nationally televised game, and if you've seen the game day options for next week, they're horrible. So if Kentucky is 6-1 and they're playing Mississippi State, you got game day in Lexington. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, and they could still do it even lose to the LSU, to be honest with you, because there's just not any good matchups that week. But I'm interested to watch this game because I'm interested to see how the Kentucky team plays. I'm just wondering how their defense is going to hold up and can they actually stuff LSU and not have them do anything on offense, because I think Kentucky could score. I just don't know if they're going to be able to stop LSU.
I'm with you as well. It's an interesting game for both teams because, once again, LSU might be a good team lurking under there. Like, that Florida game could have just been their coming out party, so to speak. They finally realized, hey, we're going to give it to Fournette. They put Harris back there, and he starts getting more snaps. LSU, if they can get him in at home and, you know, get Harris, like, you know, 15, 20 snaps, and he can throw the ball all over the place, suddenly this team, I mean, they're not a national title contender, but if they're a 5-3, you know, even 6-2 SEC team, this isn't what Kentucky signed up for a week ago. Like, LSU looked like a team that was reeling. They lost to Auburn 41-7. They just looked awful. If they come into this and all of a sudden they look like the LSU of old, which could happen, then Kentucky's in some deep trouble. So we're going to learn a lot about both teams. And honestly, we just don't know. I think LSU's and Kentucky are probably the two biggest wild cards right now. LSU, because they've played too many good, really, really good teams, and we know they're not on that level. And Kentucky, just because they haven't played anyone good yet. But this is it. This is where we find out if these are really good football teams or whether they're imposters.
Yeah, I put out today, it's hard, as much as I am a Kentucky fan, it's hard for me to sit here and say Kentucky can beat LSU. When you're looking at LSU was a preseason top 10, and Kentucky only won two games last year. To sit here and say there's that kind of improvement from Kentucky, it very well might be. They are a vastly improved team, but they still have problems. I mean, if you listen to the coach this week, he was all about it. He's like, you know, we still have a lot of things we need to improve on. And that defense, being able to stop the run, is one of them. Because even mediocre teams have been able to put up some good running yards against Kentucky.
Yeah, and remember, they, you know, going back to how much I think Vanderbilt stinks, but they only beat Vanderbilt 17-7. That's not that encouraging. If Kentucky was truly a top-tier team, they would have won that game by 3 touchdowns. I mean, they still won the game, and I think winning counts. And they're clearly – I think they're going to finish second in the East at the end of the day. The question is, how good is second in the East?
I like that's good discussions. So the only other game we haven't covered is Georgia-Missouri. And to me, is it Jekyll and Hyde with Georgia's defense? Or is it just the teams they're playing have been smoke and mirrors on the other side? And Missouri just wasn't anywhere close to as good as we considered they might be when they started off the season 4-0, dropping their last two, getting shut out for the first time in Pinkel's reign at Columbia, Missouri. You know, that Georgia defense stepped up and played a game like you saw the first game of the season against Clemson in the second half, where everybody was talking about how great Georgia's defense was. All of a sudden, Georgia's defense showed up to play again when everybody was talking about how bad they were the last 3 weeks. Add on top of that, Nick Chubb, freshman, gets more carries in one game than he did so far the entire season. It's Jekyll and Hyde from both sides of the ball here.
I think there was a little bit of the rally effect, Todd Gurley's suspension. I think Georgia really showed up for that. I think Georgia reacted really well to that. I think they bonded together as a team and sort of said, we're going to show everybody that we're more than just Todd Gurley. And clearly this shows that Todd Gurley's overrated. I think really what they...
It's that offensive line is what you're saying.
Yeah, but really what it came down to is that these... Missouri is not a very good football team. They lost to Indiana. And good football teams don't lose to Indiana. And Georgia, I think, went out there. I think they had something to prove, and they're playing a mediocre team, and they just blew their doors off. And I don't think there's anything more to it than that.
And I think you also have a quarterback in Matty Mock that has totally regressed since the start of the season. I've got to watch just a part of this one because I was – drinking heavily and getting prepared for the Auburn game. But I remember seeing the third and fourth interception. I mean, just horrible interceptions. I mean, what did he have? 92 yards of passing, four picks. I mean, that's your problem right there. You're talking about a guy that before the year, everybody says, this guy could jump into the top three quarterbacks in the league. And I would say, he's down in the bottom six. And, he's totally taken a step back this year with the reins of it. And, they're not being able to run the football. He's obviously can't move it, but for them to score zero and for Georgia, that was the most shocking thing of the day for me was they just kind of, Georgia kind of showed up and definitely took care of business. But, that was not the outcome I thought was fixing to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm still not sure what I'm looking at with Georgia. I picked them preseason to be my winners out of the East, but yet Missouri goes and beats South Carolina at Columbia. They lose to Indiana and they lose to Georgia by getting shut out. I don't know what's in the East anymore. I just don't know what's there.
Yeah, the East is crazy. I don't think anyone can read it. I think Georgia's a good team. I'm actually surprised that Mason's not having a better season than he is. I really always think that they have a good quarterback. Rick is really good at developing quarterbacks. But even with Gurley going, being suspended for just ridiculous reasons, Chubb showed that he's pretty good. Georgia just breed running backs down there. One goes down and another one pops up. I mean, before Gurley, there was Isaiah Crowell. And, there's just always a great running back down there. So I think Georgia's a good football team. We don't really have to worry whether they're good. The question is whether they're great. That South Carolina game, I can't even explain it. I'm dead serious when I say that is the most mystifying result of the college football season, except maybe Virginia Tech beating Ohio State. You know what? Sometimes good teams have bad nights. So Georgia, I still think, is a threat to rally and even win the SEC. I don't think we should write them off entirely. But that said, it's going to be tough for them. If the East is definitely weaker than the West, and if you start playing that week in, week out, your quality of play starts to drop to your opponent's level. And it's going to be hard for them when they make the SEC championship game, which I am 90% certain they're going to do, for them to raise their game to play Mississippi State or Auburn or Ole Miss or even Alabama. I think that's going to be a really tough challenge for Rick when that happens. I think if anyone's up to it, Rick is. He's a great coach. But this is a team that their whole goal is just to get through this season without losing again or maybe just losing one more time and then putting it all down on the SEC championship game.
That's right.
All right, so let's look quickly at this week, because we talked a lot about some of this upcoming week's matchups. I don't think there's any reason to talk about Furman, South Carolina, but we'll stick with Missouri for a second because they get to go back to the swamp or at least Florida stays home for a second week, I should say, and Missouri gets to go there. The team I saw Saturday in Missouri, they're going to get another loss. There's no way around it. It's even with Florida, with as many question marks and all the things we just talked about 5 minutes ago with them playing with LSU, Florida's going to win this game.
No? Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, this one's a complete toss-up. I think Florida comes out. They're playing at home. They're playing in the swamp. You know, they are reeling. But I think for Missouri, that was more than just a loss to them last week. I think that's a very difficult thing to bounce back off of. I don't think this is a team that's going to channel something going on the road and, you know, and put together, you know, their best effort of the season. You know, I think this is, I think it's much more than that, but, you know, I mean, it's two teams that are coming off two difficult losses, and, I'm going to lean towards the home team in this one.
Yeah, I think playing at home is a big thing. And also, I think Florida can feel okay about themselves after the LSU loss because they can feel that they should have won, which, once again, doesn't count as a win. But they still think they're a good team. I think Florida's sitting there thinking, you know what, we gave that game away. We can go out and still show them. They still have that belief that they're going to go out and win games. Missouri, I don't know what they're clinging to at this point. You lose to Indiana. You lose by 34 to Georgia. You get shut out. Your whole identity is scoring points. And if you can't do that, and let's be honest, Florida's got their problems, but they still have a really good defense. I don't think they're going to get shut out again, but I do think Florida's going to win this game fairly comfortably. This is a big game for Florida, but I think Missouri, they have all the earmarks of a team that's already packed it in. I think that was a season-killing loss to Georgia.
And we're saying that about a team that's just 1-1 in the SEC. But you very well could be right, Stephen. From a Kentucky standpoint, I hope you're right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just don't see what they're going to build off of.
So we talked about Georgia going to Arkansas. That's going to be a tough matchup. I'm curious to see what Georgia's defense can do against that run game.
I'm interested to see because I think if you're Georgia, you take a ton of momentum into that game. You've kind of taken, hey, this is the rallying cry. I've got all my wide receivers back. I've got two games with, you know, my receivers on hand. You know, I've given the ball to a freshman that's done well. Our defense played well. Let's go into Arkansas. And then I think Arkansas put a lot into that Alabama game. So I'm interested to see how this one turns out. I think Georgia actually walks in there and gets a W.
What's the update on the running backs? I know that Gurley actually showed up for practice, but what about the other two running backs that have been injured? Are they going to be seeing the field soon? Do we know?
I don't know the injury report at Georgia.
Yeah, I've got no idea.
I don't either. All right. That was my only question.
Yeah, look, Georgia's got a better defense than you think they do. It's like they always, you know, it's not great, but once again, it's a very good effective unit.
Well, Pruitt's making a difference.
But yeah, Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas should be better than they are. I said it earlier tonight. We should be talking about Arkansas the way we're talking about Mississippi State. Arkansas should have two big wins right now, and you know, knocking off, you know, Alabama and A&M and, you know, riding all the momentum in the world. And instead, they go in there and they're going to play Georgia in what is essentially, you know, we're saying it's October. It's another one of those big must-win games, which is – in the SEC is so tightly packed this year. Just every game feels like a must-win.
Yeah.
You know, Arkansas, it's still early for them. I still think they can rally the season because if they pull the upset on Georgia, you know, they have the belief in themselves. I think they can beat LSU. I think they can beat Ole Miss. I mean, this is a team that's not, you know, because as you pointed out, Ole Miss is built on speed, not power, and Arkansas is all about power. This is a team that feels that they can pull upsets. They just need that one to burst the dam.
The opposite can be true, though, because if they lose, now they're 0-4 in the SEC.
That's precisely what it reminds me.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of, Shane? You remember Franklin's, might have been his second year, whenever we were sitting here doing games and they were going to Missouri, and I think they were 1-3 that year.
Yeah.
And they were heading to Missouri, and I was like, this is kind of the do or die game for James Franklin. This is a game he's going to have them on point. This is the game that kind of all the chips are on hand. If they're going to make a run to get back here and make sure that this thing's not a fluke anymore, this is the game they're going to go and win, and they win and won it. I think Arkansas is in that boat. It's kind of like, you know, hey, this is our, you know, we put everything into the last two games. We got to, you know, we got to step up and we got to get over this hump. And Georgia's the type of team that can just go in there and pull a South Carolina like they did, where they can't stop anybody and they just get into a scoring battle, and who knows?
Yeah, Georgia, you know, they can lay down with the best of them. And Arkansas is the best 0-3 team I've ever seen. And you look at their schedule, and I remember when we did this preseason, we were curious, where are the wins going to come from? Arkansas is this incredibly improved team, but there's no easy wins on their schedule. We could imagine a scenario where they improve a ton and go 0-8 again. Yeah. And that, God, that's so rough. I don't think they will go 0-8. They're going to beat somebody, and I'm hoping it's Georgia and not LSU.
Yeah, no, I agree. Everything you said, I just have to second. They are going to not get shut. They're not going to get shut out in the SEC this year. I can tell you that. But where is that loss going to – or where is that win going to come from? Where are they going to sneak up and beat somebody that – Vegas is going to say they're still the underdog, because every time that they come in and play somebody, Arkansas is going to be the underdog. But
Definitely.
So, and so who is that person going to be? Because somebody's going to get it on the chin, and we just don't know what team that's going to be yet. And we all sit here and hope it's not ours.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's how I'm hoping it's Georgia. So,
anything we need to add that we didn't talk about when we covered Texas A&M, Alabama?
It's an important game for both of them. High stakes.
Yeah, I think we might be writing the obituaries for Alabama football a little bit too early. They're kind of a horror movie villain. You have to kill them 3 or 4 times before they're dead. So right now, I don't want to say bet the house on Alabama, but at the same time, I'm feeling pretty good about Alabama's chances right now. I think, you know, Nick Saban's the kind of guy who is reading press clippings and he's going to shove it in all of our faces.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things, Shane, where we talked about Mississippi State, one of the things that they did, you know, they did it to Bo Wallace last year at the Kenny Hill, is make them be a quarterback, take away their first option, make them go to their second and third option, and make them be a quarterback, and make them go 12 plays in 80 yards and not 4. And if you do that, that frustrates that offense. You know, and then hopefully they'll drop it 10 times like they did against Mississippi State.
If that happens, they could realistically go 3-5 in the SEC, because their only other win, I would think, would be Missouri at that point, if they drop to Alabama, because they still have Auburn and LSU to close out the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing right now is that what Mississippi State and Ole Miss proved on Texas A&M is that if you hit them in the mouth, there's a good chance they're going to fold. And Alabama, there's nobody's going to hit you in the mouth, maybe other than LSU, that's going to make you fold. And so I think that's what Nick Saban's going to do. They're just going to get cool with them.
That said, while I agree with you on the hitting them in the mouth, A&M, the way they attack you is through the air.
Yeah.
And Alabama has shown their weakness on defense is their secondary. So
right.
A&M, you know, they ran into Ole Miss, whose strength is their secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be throwing the ball all over the place against Ole Miss, as, you know, the scoreboard shows. Against Alabama, I think their offense is going to have a lot more success. Remember, it wasn't too long ago people were talking about, you know, Kenny Thrill. I know he fell down badly, but that's because he played some really darn good defenses. He's now going to play a defense again that's much more suited to A&M style. So let's also, as much after I just said don't write off Alabama season, don't write off A&M either, because this is a great matchup for him. It is the perfect – they want to play a team with a weak secondary, and that's what Alabama has.
Tennessee at Ole Miss, Blair, you think there's no way in hell that Tennessee wins that game?
I don't. I mean, I just don't see any way. I would love for it to happen, of course. I mean, I would be more than thrilled. But, yeah, I just don't see that. I think it's got disaster waiting all over it.
I won't quite say no way in hell, but, yeah, it's pretty unlikely. Ole Miss is clearly the better team.
And then we'll wrap it up with the Kentucky headed to Death Valley for another night game. Why couldn't that have been 11 o'clock kickoff?
I'll tell you, I'll give you my opinion on it. I think LSU ends up pulling this out. I think the wind down there swamped the way they actually pulled it out and fought their way back. I think really helps this team. I think playing at home, I think they can move the ball on Kentucky. I actually see it more of about a, 31 to, 24 type of ball game where it's never really too much in doubt, but Kentucky can hit enough to actually kind of keep that thing close and make it interesting.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of really long drives from LSU. A lot of Fournette, McGee, Hilliard, Fournette, maybe one play action pass, but that's about it. LSU is going to just say, stop our running game, and Kentucky is going to be unable to do it. And it's going to be one of those classic LSU kind of games where he just keeps on doing the same thing until you make him stop him. And the one, as much as we've knocked Jennings saying Harris is a better quarterback, and I do think Harris is a lot better, Jennings doesn't turn the ball over. And what he's not going to do is he's not going to lose the game for LSU. And he's going to hand the ball off a bunch. He's not going to give Kentucky that big turnover that they need to pull off an upset. And I think that's the key to pulling an upset on the road, is to have that big play, get the momentum on your side, knock the crowd out of it. I mean, that's what Mississippi State had going for them. And I don't think Kentucky is going to have that moment.
No, I agree totally. I mean, Kentucky has to be opportunistic to win this ball game. They're going to have to have – their defense is going to have to come up with some sort of stop, interception, pick six, fumble recovery to really put that in Kentucky's favor. But what also scares me from Kentucky's standpoint is that fourth quarter, is that can they – if they – I'll say this. If they have the lead, can they sustain it and hold it and continue to grow it in the fourth quarter? Because LSU is so strong – in the fourth quarter, they have no give up in them. So you have to sit there and from a Kentucky fan, even if Kentucky is ahead going into the fourth quarter or even late into the fourth quarter, you still have to be worried until there's all zeros on that scoreboard.
Yeah, and I also say that Les Miles teams have always played off of emotion, and it's kind of hard to play off of a dead crowd. And normally Kentucky can hope to sneak into Death Valley and catch the 11 a.m. kick or something like that, or fans looking ahead to Alabama or Ole Miss on the schedule. Well, LSU's having a rough year. The fans are focused on this Kentucky game. This is, for one of the first times in Kentucky's history, this is the game that LSU has circled as their must-win. And I think that's going to be the thing. There's going to be a pumped-up crowd. They're going to be going nuts, and the team will feed off of that. And it's not going to be like the State game where half the crowd left in the third quarter. They're going to be staying towards, until the end, and they're going to be cheering their heads off.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, guys. Great podcast. We do this every week. If you're still listening in, come back, check, subscribe so it automatically shows up. We're going to get the next week's podcast out a little early, I believe. We've got some things lined up. So be on the lookout for this one a little earlier next week. So it truly will be almost day after review of the week that's already occurred. So guys, we appreciate you listening in, and we are going to call this podcast done.